One brought to you this morning by First Baptist Church, and this is AM 1400. I get the opportunity to spend a little bit of time this morning with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Andy Coleman. He has been in here a few times before announcing his candidacy. Andy, I'm trying to remember roughly about 9, maybe 10 months ago on this microphone, as I recall.
It's been a while, yeah.
Again, I know since you have been in, the president has officially announced his choice for the director of NASA, current Congressman Jim Bridenstine. I have not seen any specific dates on Senate confirmation hearings, and once he's confirmed, if he's confirmed, he would still have to step down from his current House seat in order to take the job. But right now we're talking about a November of next year election, because we know that Mr. Bridenstine has announced he will not run for re-election this term.
Well, yeah, the way I look at it is the worst case, I'm looking at the summer of next year. As far as the primary goes, it will be a November general election. And honestly, my military background just kicks in, and we're Semper Gumby, always flexible, and we want to be prepared to go hot if we need to go hot. That is sooner. We're very content for any additional time that we have to get out there and introduce ourselves, our campaign,
otherwise,
to the families.
Otherwise, it's just the old military game of hurry up and wait.
So. Yep, and we've been there before.
And we'll be again, no doubt, because the legislature is not unlike that circumstance sometimes. You're waiting for the vote to come up on the floor or waiting for the next event. So.
Yep, there's something to be said for patience and getting things done.
It is. And so that's one attribute that you can claim, that you have had trials in patience.
Yep, it's true. Like you said, when going through military training or any of those efforts, there are frustrations. Sometimes things are very intense, and other times you're waiting and trying to prepare for what's next. But that serves us well. I think for some, it's they imagine that it must be very challenging to be going through a process like this. And honestly, it's not too bad. We're just always trying to be diligent and taking intentional steps and preparing for contingencies as they arise.
And for someone like yourself that is preparing for legislative work, it's not exactly the way we learned it in high school civics class, as far as the bill is proposed and seemingly immediately it goes to a hearing and seemingly immediately it all gets done. The process of government is a little messier than that.
A little messier, a little slower at times. But this isn't that surprising to me. I've studied policy. I've studied politics from the Air Force Academy on, so more than 2 decades studying these types of developments. So it's not new to me. This is my first run for political office, but I do understand some of the ins and outs of how things proceed. So that will be helpful.
And again, talking about your service, training first of all for the legal profession, for work as a lawyer through the Air Force Academy, among the finest education available. We look forward to that career in military service as a military intelligence officer, and I'll say that really, I think, prepares anyone for foreign affairs, certainly better than probably anything else, because you're actually doing the work.
You're right, and I think it's important to point out in this race that I am the only candidate in this race that knows what it's like to deploy with a military unit to a war zone, that has foreign policy experience, that has national security experience, and it's a fairly deep-level experience. Something that's also interesting that struck me about a week ago is I'm also the only candidate in this race that has experience working in the Muslim world. That, of course, is an important area that we are involved with. That's an important area for our government to be very smart and savvy in making decisions on. And even take this race aside, looking at the U.S. Senate, looking at the U.S. House, it's possible that I have among the most experience working in that area of the world than anybody currently sitting in one of those seats. So this is what we bring to offer. This is what we're running for. We want to be a thoughtful, constructive, conservative voice for Oklahoma's families there in D.C.
But it would be a safe assumption to say that work experience in the Muslim world gives you an understanding that is special to many circumstances that could be called for a vote or for policy decision.
And that's why I point this out. I think that's an important distinction. I think that's something for people to consider, and I think we need more wise voices speaking up into these situations.
And yet, turning the coin over, because of your military service, and that is a decreasing number as far as the members of the Congress, both houses combined, that can claim that distinction.
Yeah, I'm a battle-tested military veteran. I've been around that block, and we need more veterans in those seats. We need more champions for our veterans, many of whom are struggling with different things, trying to work with the government or work with the VA. We need more people in those seats that understand that, understand what they've gone through, understand the challenges of coming back from deployments and trying to reintegrate from the reserves or active duty into society. There's a lot at work there, and we need people to step up to the plate and help.
The president this week made some comments on VA wait times, and those are online. I haven't looked at them, but comments that I have heard from people who have, it's not just a 3-day, 6-day, 7-day wait time. We're talking about measured more likely in weeks.
Yep.
to get that first deployment.
So the veterans that are going through that experience are having a very difficult time. And I point this out. This is just a small microcosm of what we're looking at when we're looking at healthcare across the nation. These are the types of problems when you decrease competition, when you decrease transparency, you inject problems for medical care. So I just see that the VA system is a small little subset of what we might be looking forward to as a country that gives me pause.
There are those in the Congress, and I don't believe I would ever put you in that camp, but I'll leave the comments to you, that are trying to work toward a single payer system. You're shaking your head no. I think it's a more safe assumption to say, running as a Republican, that you would prefer an open market, free market solution.
Absolutely. I'm a full spectrum conservative. I'm an economic conservative. I'm a social conservative. And I welcome that fight. I welcome the opportunity to speak against those efforts. In fact, when I look at Obamacare and how it's just collapsed and the wheels are falling off, I'm not convinced that it wasn't designed to usher in single payer. But boy, there's a whole lot of problems associated with that. And I will look forward to the day where I can be a part of that team, part of that constellation of people coming together in the Congress to point out that no, what we need is a whole lot less government between you and your provider. We need a whole lot more competition, a whole lot more free market, a whole lot more transparency. And when that happens, you know, your quality of care goes up and the costs associated with that care go down. So that's the argument that we have to make. We can't blink from it. We can't shy away from it. We just got to step in, stand for what we believe, and that's what we'll do.
And I think as we look at the proposals that have already been voted on and the one that is currently before the Congress right now, at worst case, it's sausage being made. At best case scenario, it's still not a perfect solution.
No, and one of the things that I point out is when I'm going to be in that seat, I understand that there's very few times that there will ever be a perfect solution. There will never be a perfect bill for Andy Coleman, but I do want to be a part of that effort to move it in a constructive direction, in a way that is going to be helpful to the families here in Oklahoma and to Americans across this great country.
How do you expect to achieve that goal of approaching the perfect solution, something that is acceptable to families in Oklahoma?
I think a lot of it is just knowing where you stand and being able to articulate that message clearly for others. These are good policies. These are good arguments to have. I'm a conservative because conservative policies benefit people. My entire lifetime has been in service of people. I am a battle-tested conservative. I'm a battle-tested military leader. I've been around this block a few times, and I've worked on teams of different stripes, from intelligence teams in the Middle East to legal teams to ministry teams. I serve well with other people. I work well with other people. And I want to be a part of that solution for our country during this difficult time that our country's in.
We're talking with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Andy Coleman, on a Community Connection. We'll continue in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church is focused on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Continuing our time this morning with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Andy Coleman. We've been talking about some of the issues as we know them right now. Election day, more than a year away unless something happens. So to say that these are the issues we're talking about today, by the time it comes around for a primary next summer or certainly a November election, it's likely that some of those issues will change.
Yeah, it's true, and I'll just keep pointing this out. We'll flex as the issues adjust, but I am a pro-gun, pro-life, full-spectrum conservative. What I say I believe in, I back up with action. Sometimes that action has entailed significant risk, so I point that out. I'm trying to be as transparent with the communities here in Oklahoma's 1st District. I want them to know exactly where I land on the issues. I have stood in the gap. And been a voice for the voiceless, whether we're talking about the unborn, when I was in a leadership role with the Christian Legal Society, or a Blackstone Fellow with the Alliance Defending Freedom, an organization that takes an unapologetic stand for the sanctity of life or your religious liberty rights. I've stood in the gap and been a voice for the voiceless for the persecuted church, serving up to 100 days a year as the Middle East Regional Director for Voice of the Martyrs right here in Bartlesville. I've backed up what I believe with action. The same will hold true as we're looking at this seat to represent the families of Oklahoma's 1st District.
Looking at some of those things you just talked about, sanctity of life, and I think it's a reasonable assumption to say that there is room for the federal government, for the Congress, to take a firm position on some of those ideas.
There absolutely is, and I think it's incumbent upon us to state clearly where we stand and to back that up when we're in those roles. I think Roe v. Wade was, from a constitutional perspective, an abomination when you look at it. The reasoning that was put forth, it just doesn't hold water. It really amounts to justices supplanting their policy preferences for those that were put forth by others. And I think it's irresponsible. I am a constitutionalist. I am a federalist. I see the brilliance of the U.S. Constitution, how there's a lane for the federal government to drive in, a lane for your state and local government to drive in, and how things go off the charts strange when we depart from that.
Another one of the topics that you just talked about had to do with firearms, and certainly I would not want to step on any Tenth Amendment issues, mm-hmm. but is there room for some sort of federal open carry policy? So again, not without stepping on the toes of the state to say state X chooses not to do something like that. Is there room for a federal policy, or is that strictly a state's right issue?
Well, I it's the U.S. Constitution. It's the Second Amendment. So I see that there's certainly measures that could be applied across the board from that standpoint, and I welcome that conversation as well. But what I'll point out is to those that push back against our Second Amendment rights is, listen, evil people bent on evil things are going to do whatever they can with the tools that they have. It may not be a firearm. We've seen a rash of cases where people are driving vehicles into crowds and doing awful things. They will find tools if it's a box cutter or a vehicle. It doesn't have to be a firearm. The Second Amendment exists for a particular reason, and it wasn't just for hunting. It was because our founders did their homework. They studied other governments, other states, and knew that to protect the liberties and freedoms that we were to enjoy, that we had to have that amendment in place.
Border security issues, and northern border, southern border, certainly along the coastlines of our oceans.
Yeah.
It is the responsibility of any nation, I think, to say we are a nation, to secure ourselves.
Charlie, you're right. We're either sovereign or we're not. And for too long, a spirit of lawlessness has governed our immigration policies, whether we're talking about our border security or sanctuary cities across the United States. The rule of law needs to be enforced. If people have a problem with the law, well, there's a mechanism for changing that. It's all prescribed in our government. Do that through your elected representatives. But if it's not, then we need to enforce the law. All kinds of unintended consequences kick in when we flout the law and say, well, we're just going to allow this, but we won't allow that. And on a whim, we make these decisions. There's all kinds of unintended consequences. That's something that I pay attention to as a former intelligence officer with the military. That's why I think we need more people, more military veterans, more people who have been in complex settings whether you're looking at the litigation aspect of the law, or the military and the challenges and complexities of foreign policy. We need more people with those types of backgrounds in those seats speaking into these situations, because second and third order effects are real and they can be very damaging.
Looking at the southern border, just the conversation having to do with a wall, whether whether we talk about a physical structure, something resembling the China, the Wall of China that's been there for centuries, or something more of a flexible electronic type wall, what do you see, what would you propose as the first district representative?
I would want to do whatever makes the most sense of securing that southern border. I think a wall makes sense. Americans armed with common sense understand barriers. There's a reason we put doors on our homes. We want to control who goes in and who goes out. It's not because we hate everybody outside our homes, but we want to control that inflow and that outflow. The same is true on our southern border. If we leave it exposed and open, there's other unintended consequences that come into effect. There's people that are going to be willing to take tremendous risks to breach those gaps. Worse, there's people that are willing to send their children and young people to risk their lives to breach those gaps. We need to secure it. We need to police it. We just need to be the sovereign state that the United States is. Control that border. And again, if people have problems with it, we can always adjust laws as they see fit. But right now, this is the law, and we need to take intentional affirmative steps to secure it.
You talked about being a fiscal conservative as well, and I want to approach that a little bit with you. The Congress is talking tax policy right now, to everything from I don't think we'll get to a total rework, but simplifying the tax code, looking at what can be done to make it I'll say better and leave the vision to you. What would be the Andy Coleman vision for a bill right now for tax policy?
Oh, for tax policy, there's no reason that our taxes can't be flatter, they can't be simpler, there can't be more transparency. Honestly, it should be able to fit on a postcard. It doesn't need to be complex. Flat tax, fair tax, whatever might be the reform option, as long as we could get those votes together to pass through sensible reform, I think most of those people that are agitating for those types of policy changes are making these arguments. They want it flatter, they want it simpler, and it makes sense to me.
Looking at what is being, my words, not yours, nibbled around the edges right now on tax code, whether we're talking about corporate tax rate, getting it down to, I think I've heard, 15%. Is that something that certainly as an initial step would be acceptable to you?
Absolutely. I think especially when you're looking at the corporate tax rates, we are not competitive on the international scene. I think if we lower those corporate rates, you're going to see more, I think, as yet tax base expands. There's actually likely to be more tax revenue as we make these sensible reforms. So it absolutely makes sense.
Looking at certainly as that extends to bringing home dollars, corporate dollars particularly, that have migrated outside the country over a period of decades. I'm not pointing fingers at any particular administration. Several have encouraged those dollars to move out. Bringing those dollars back in, what's your plan for that?
Well, I think the tax reform is a key component of that effort. I think that there's businesses that will reap the goodwill and benefits of Americans that recognize that, especially if they do any kind of PR on that, and especially if those tax rates are competitive. It's a win-win, and I think it would be good for our country. It would be good for Oklahoma.
Okay. Well, looking at the viewpoints of Oklahomans, taking those as an elected representative of those people, and sometimes it's representing the parochial interests of the district you represent, and sometimes it's simply saying, no, I think from an Oklahoma point of view, this is the best thing to do.
Yep.
What are you doing these days? I know you're out to town hall meetings and that sort of thing, but gathering the mind of Oklahoma, so to speak.
Well, I'm doing everything I can to meet with families and communities and business leaders throughout the district. I've enjoyed that, and I've also appreciated those here in Oklahoma and around our country who have really taken a close look at my background, at my conservative views, and come out and publicly supported us. That includes Dr. Everett Piper right here at Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville. It includes Denny Garrison, Morton Blackwell, a whole bunch of people, Pam Peterson down in Tulsa. I'm grateful for that. In fact, yesterday, the Combat Veterans for Congress dropped an endorsement for us, which I'm very grateful to receive. So we are doing everything we can to make sure that the families here know where we land, and I'm just going to continue to do that. In fact, for those families that are listening, for those people that are listening right now, I have three asks. I would ask for your prayers today and your votes, whenever that primary might be, whether it's later this year or in June. I would also ask that you spread the word as you're having conversations with friends, with family, with colleagues. Share about us. Share what we're doing. Get out there and just help us to meet more people. And, of course, I would ask for your financial support. The finances are the fuel that campaigns run on, including ours. And if you're interested in doing that, we're coming up on a September 30th deadline. That's our quarterly deadline, which will make my report card. That's my report card as a candidate. So if this is the type of representation that you want for you and your families, I would encourage you to visit our website, andycoleman.org, and make a safe and secure donation right then and there. You could do that today, and we'd be blessed. And we're going to try to steward every penny that we receive and to be as effective and efficient as possible. But that'd be very significant for us.
But that's the September 30th deadline. As a reporting milestone, everybody else has the same deadline to make that report. It does say something about the support for your campaign.
Absolutely. And we want to just come in as strong as possible. That's what others are gauging to see if they want to jump in. And fortunately, we have, you know, been blessed with a lot of support around the communities. We've had a whole lot of people sacrificially giving. And it's all meant a great deal to us, and we are just going to continue to be out there, to be diligent, to do everything that we can to give the families here the opportunities to kick the tires and see what we're about.
Andy Coleman, if you choose to support him, he does have that September 30th deadline. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlie.
That's a Community Connection on K1.
From the ONN, I'm Sean Carey. The special session of the legislature